Well, hello there. This is Sandra, and I'm thanking AdamandEve.com right now for sponsoring this week's episode. If you go to their website and type in sex nerd at checkout, you're going to get 50% off almost any item, free shipping of that item. You're going to get 3 free DVDs tossed in that box and a super secret gift. That's a lot of good stuff, I'll tell you that. So this week I was checking out their website, kind of going, what's going on? I realized they carry something very special. For $19.95, you can turn just about any simple toy into a booty safe toy. This is a big deal because there's been a huge problem in the sex toy kingdom where things like, for instance, the Velvet Touch Vibrator, a slimline toy, simple, bullet shaped, 6 inches long. People use that anally, but it's not safe because it can get pulled into the butt because the sphincters are strong and the waves of contractions can pull something in. It's lots of issues. Not a problem if you put a bumper on your toy. Evolved Vibrator Enhancers, $19.95, silicone. They're great. And anyway, I care about you and your pleasure. So go to AdamandEve.com, type in promo code SEXNERD, and you're going to get 50% off almost any item, free shipping, 3 free DVDs, and that super secret gift. Hey, we're worth it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra Podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hello, sex nerds. Sandra here. I'm with Jason Porath again. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Sandra.
We're back on this satin-sheeted bed.
Woo! It is the bed of choice.
It's sexy. I love coming over here and just jumping on your bed and being like, I want to talk about feelings. It's like the least sexy thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get plenty of action on this here bed.
Plenty of people coming over, jumping on and yelling about feelings. I don't know if that constitutes action, but...
That's action. Okay. I'm giving this bed plenty of action right now.
All right. There's so much action happening right now. Action packed.
Ready to give podcast action?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. This is business time. Okay.
Woo. Like sexy Flight of the Conchords business time?
No. It's like sex nerd talking about feelings time.
Oh, it's always talking about feelings time.
Okay. So this is business time, meaning we're going to get into the interview with Kate McCombs, who's a sex educator who lives in Melbourne, Australia.
That's a very nice place.
Yes, she's very cool. We had a lot of fun being super sex geeks. Okay, so before we get into Kate McCombs' interview, a couple things. First of all, we talked a couple weeks ago when I got my IUD out.
Oh, yes. And it was a bit of an experience, as I recall.
Yeah, it was. And I was sad about it. And I was talking about how sad I was. And guess what, Jason?
What?
2 weeks later, I feel so much better.
You are in high spirits right now, I can tell you.
Yeah, it's like the world is shinier. And I am the person that I was before I got my IUD in.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, so.
See, to all the rest of us that have only known you while you've had the IUD in, it's like a whole new song. We're like, who the fuck is this person?
It's like, be more...
Yeah, why aren't you more depressed?
it's more energy. Like, for some reason, I have more energy.
Come over here and bounce and talk about feelings.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but good feelings.
Yeah, great feelings.
Oh, also, this weekend. Okay, what? Sex nerds. I don't think I've told you guys yet, but I applied and got into a program to do some basic sex ed learning with SFISI, which is the San Francisco Sex Information Organization up in San Fran.
Woohoo!
So that is 4 weekends going up and being 8 hours of just constant information. So this weekend I was just there learning about research methods and fisting and I love saying...
How to research fisting? Is that like a subtopic?
The first day we went over, yes, it's specifically how to do an experiment.
So you have like a control of a certain diameter, and then you put in things of increasing diameters and on a scale of 1 to 10. No,
we could.
Okay.
Now,
a few of my colleagues have been like, why are you doing this FISI training now? Like, I feel like you're beyond that. And the truth is that I'm taking this to go over a lot of the basics to make sure that my foundation is strong. Mm. And just like nurses and doctors and therapists and things is to revisit lots of information is really important. And there's plenty of stuff that I haven't paid attention to in years. Yeah. So it's awesome. So yeah, fisting was one of them.
All right.
And we went over anal sex and pleasure. And we went over female anatomy. And I learned about how the egg, when you, the follicle of that the egg matures in, goes to the side of the ovary. And then the egg bursts through like a ninja.
The movement you made it more like an alien face hugger, like exploding out of the chest. But okay, ninja. Let's go with ninja.
It's like a large caviar egg. But yeah, ninja. Or like, oh sure, like an alien, whatever.
Yeah.
But guess what I learned?
Tell me.
I'm pushing you now.
Oh God.
Oh my God.
I'm getting pushed.
I learned that the reason why, like, after a woman ovulates and the egg takes about 2 days to get to the uterus, the fallopian tube journey, that's when you basically can get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But once it gets to the uterus, usually we're told, oh, and then you really can't get pregnant. I learned why the egg is not as fertile once it gets to the uterus.
Why is that?
Because it gets beat up on its journey through the fallopian tube. It is messed up. It is like punched in the face, fucked up. By the time it gets to the uterus, it's no good anymore.
It's just going through hazing? Are they just like standing around with paddles as it goes through? Just like
the fallopian tube. You know, I thought of this as gentle, like happy journey. It's not.
No, it's just sort of ricocheting down a rusty metal pipe.
Yeah. So anyway, that was cool. I got really excited when I learned that.
You have got the biggest grin on your face talking about beat up eggs.
Dude, flying into San Francisco to just sit and learn about sex for 2 days. And the SFSI people are amazing. Okay, San Francisco Sex Information, sfsi.org. So this is an organization that is specifically there to answer your sex questions. So a lot of people have STD questions, fertility questions, relationship questions. They have a hotline and an email where you can send them questions. So I realize I'm not always available for people. There's lots of questions out there. Go to them. They are there for you. Oh my God. Jason, it's amazing.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And I'll be revisiting. I'll probably talk to them on some episode about the training because it's great.
Brain is going to be so full of sexy things. I'm amazed that you're so functional. My brain would probably be melting.
Oh, I loved it. Oh, man. One of the last things that we learned this weekend was on communication. And they had 12 points of how people, like, screw up communication, like little things that people do to be super lame. And I do some of them. And I was like, oh, my God.
It's like, I know that. That's me. You've been studying me.
I'm a terrible person. No, it was good. It was really. It's the great thing about learning stuff about sexuality and relationships is it also betters you as a person.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
Pretty exciting. Anyway, we're going to leave the listeners with the Kate McCombs episode, and you and I are going to go watch some Game of Thrones.
Woohoo! Also known as Tits and Horses. You know that's the actual name of the intro song? Did you know this?
No, I did not.
Well, that's the informal internet name. It's Horses, Tits and 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 Horses. Yeah.
Well, now I'm in the know.
Yeah. And now all of your listeners are as well. Tits and Horses. It's a thing. Look it up.
Excellent. I can't wait. Well, let's go watch some Tits and Horses.
Woohoo!
All right, sex nerds, enjoy the interview with Kate McCombs. It was fun.
I look forward to hearing it myself.
Tits and Horses!
Tits and Horses!
Hey, sex monkeys! I don't know. It started out as naughty monkeys, and now it's you're a sex monkey! Now you're a sex nerd. Sometimes they're unique snowflakes. Like, the people listening are all sorts of things.
I love it.
Yeah. I don't know. I love the people who listen to this. I love meeting them and finding out how cool they are. I'm like, oh.
I meet lots of your listeners, and they're really rad.
You do?
Yeah.
Guys, we're listening to the sexy sound of Kate McCombs' voice.
Hello there.
All the way from Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, very nicely done.
Thank you. You taught me that a while ago. I feel really good knowing that. Welcome to the States, lady.
Thank you.
You're originally from California.
I am, yes.
Yes, but you are I met you at the very first Sex Geekdom LA meetup.
Yes.
Just around the corner from Meltdown Comics. And you, okay, like I knew of you from Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
KateCom.
Ooh.
KateCom.
Yes. But you are like a mover and a shaker in Australia.
Wow. That's very kind.
So tell the folks at home and on the bus and at the gym a little bit about yourself.
Well, I do a number of things under the umbrella of sex education. So one of the things I do, as Sandra mentioned, is I started something called Sex Geekdom, which is a community for people like us who like to hang out and talk about sex and have cool conversations about things. And like things like, hey, I just read this really interesting research about antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea.
Ooh, tell me more.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a total sex geek response.
No, seriously. Well, because, Kate, you brought it here because really we don't have a strong sex ed, sex geek community in LA. So the fact that you brought it from Australia and inspired folks here to start doing it, it's been great, and it's been monthly in LA. But you have it in Melbourne. Do you have it in Sydney as well?
Yeah, we're in four cities now. So the first group was in Melbourne, and then we've got a fledgling group in Sydney.
Okay.
And
pray for them.
pray for them, yes. and then we have a group in Madison, Wisconsin, of all places.
Huh.
I know. I was really excited about that. There's apparently quite a thriving sex positive community in Madison.
Very cool.
I got to go visit them someday. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Welcome our leader. And then here in LA.
Yay. In LA. Yeah. You guys are amazing. Like Miko and Jenna are running that. They are so on top of things. And I got here and they had stickers and like little postcards. They're really legit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I am not a community organizer type, so it's like, yes, you guys like to do that. Do it. Yay. But it's funny because I'm the sex nerd and then the sex geeks, and I'm like, I feel fine about this. it's a branding crossover. It's fine. We're all on the same boat.
It's a meeting of the pervy minds. Yeah. It's great.
Although, P.S., do not show up to one of these meetups or start your own thinking that this is a swingers like secret hangout or something.
Thanks for clarifying that. Sometimes that's a little hard, even though we put that in our materials that, you know, that it's the idea is about having conversations about sexuality, because there's very few spaces where people have honest, meaningful, kind of lighthearted and serious conversations about sex, where there, you know, there are other groups you can join if your primary interest is finding someone with whom to have sex.
Right. And you spend so much time, a lot of people listening have written being like, oh, I want to work in sex ed, or I want to volunteer my time or write and blog and be part of the sex positive tidal wave.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, tidal wave. Yeah. It's gathering momentum. Coming toward the shore. Okay. Coming at you. Ooh. But the thing is that people often feel isolated from each other. And so to have a reason to bring people together once a month is great, especially bloggers who are basically in their home. I mean, like, I work from home a lot and it's just like,
absolutely. Yeah. We have quite a few bloggers in Melbourne, and, you know, and I blog. One of the other things I do is, work for mysexprofessor.com. And
yes.
And my colleagues at My Sex Professor live on another continent. So some of them I have never met, and two of them I've only met once, and they were amazing and it was awesome. But, that's not quite enough to get my need for community met. So I kind of created Sex Geekdom selfishly, just that I wanted an excuse to hang out with a bunch of other sex positive, you know, nerds like me and you.
Yeah. Dude, and well, spending so much energy caring about how I communicate and how it lands.
Oh, yeah.
And then making sure that people feel good about themselves at the end, and I'm not like shaming a particular group by honoring another group. I mean, it's a very difficult balance at times. And it's funny to just hang out with people that are like-minded in similar mission statements to you. And then like you're all very responsible and very, you know, we're adults. And then suddenly the waiter comes around to fulfill someone's order and he's like, fish tacos? Fish tacos. Fish tacos. And it's a huge group and it's fish tacos. And no one, I'm like, I don't know. But at the same time, he's just keep saying fish tacos. And like, we're all like giggling. Like, he said it. He said, oh.
So, there are so many sex puns at the Sex Geekdom meetups. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that's good. It's really good.
It makes me happy, like, to have that space where I can like laugh and make a, you know, a joke about scrota, and you know, gotta get the correct plural there.
Is that the plural to scrota?
Scrota. Yeah.
Tell me everything.
Oh, I love that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's good, and it's also good to know that you can show up, talk about sex. I mean, really, I wish this permeated just culture in general.
Yeah, so do we I.
Could just talk about scrota. and it'd be kind of,
and it's no big thing.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah.
But you know, with the, on the topic of the professional thing and people wanting to get into sex education, like I haven't wanted to create Sex Geekdom as an exclusively professional group, something like that, but there is some kind of unofficial kind of peer mentorship that seems to happen just kind of naturally by nature of a bunch of, you know, bunch of sex geeks hanging out and clearly, like, as you say, have the same mission statement.
That's
people
true.
Have gotten, in Melbourne, people have gotten professionally connected several times.
That's true. I think people who think of networking as this you're a terrible person thing.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think networking was awful, but really it's just, oh, I like these people and you like me and we like things that are similar. Let's hang out. And it's, and because I've had people, yeah, mentor me on something I'm struggling with. And at the same time, people are like, tell me how to do this thing. And I'm like, well, it's like this. And then we just tradesies, you know, like it's
exactly.
Just fun.
Like a Skillshare.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But not hands-on. That's different.
That's a different sort of thing. When I'm thinking about Skillshare, like when one of our members taught me how to do stuff about my taxes and I taught him about how to do stuff on Twitter.
Oh, don't talk to me about taxes. I don't.
See, I didn't see me near. That's not one of my particular areas of interest. But one of the sex geeks, his name is Alex, and he's amazing. Like, he runs a peer education program and knows all this stuff about taxes.
Well,
he's rad.
Golly gee. That's the great thing about people who are intellectually stimulated by talking about sexuality.
Yeah.
They seem to be really good at other things, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good,
like,
brains.
So what else? I mean, you're clearly a dynamo, but how did you get to this point? Because I know that you have a background in public health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I moved to Australia to get my master's of public health at the University of Melbourne. And that was one of the best decisions I ever made. It was kind of a relatively last minute decision. I'd applied and then I found out I got accepted like a month later. And then 2 months after that, I was on a plane to move to a country where I had never been and didn't know anyone.
Wow.
Which was terrifying, but really good for building your confidence and doing something, you know, kind of different. And
yeah,
it was awesome. I loved studying public health somewhere where they, you know, have a public health system.
Is okay, so that is the meat of what I would like to know about. Well, first of all, kudos to you, because stepping outside your comfort zone, I mean, that's when you really know what you're made out of.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an important step in growth as a person, is when you're like, all right, something totally new.
Yeah. It was, I mean, Australia makes it easy. Like, people there are unbelievably friendly and warm, and the, you know, relatively quickly I found cool other sex educators and stuff like that, that you know, that I really got along with. So it didn't take too long to acclimate.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it was still kind of, you know, quite an expanding, lots of discomfort that you kind of move through sort of experience.
Totally. No, it's nice to hear that they're nice there. I've never been to Australia.
Oh God, they'd love you.
Yeah, I seem to get a lot of Australian like letters and mail and people tweeting.
Well, one of the things that Australians really value are people that are kind of funny and quirky and not egotistical. Like, and you are so that, and you would light them up.
I didn't feel like I had enough ego to be like, yeah, that's me. I'd be like, oh, that'd be weird to say that. That's weird. So I don't know what that means. Well, thank you. I'm kidding. And actually, we were talking the other day about how I was like, you know what I really want out of grad school now that I'm really like digging into research more, like online? I just want to write a dissertation. Like, can I just skip to the dissertation part and do the research and write the thing? And you're like, that's PhDs in Australia. I was like,
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
See, I would be the opposite. Like, I wouldn't want to do a PhD there because I like, you know, I like classes and like talking to other students and that sort of thing. That's my favorite part about school.
Well, I mean, learning is a lifelong thing. Like, give me learning every day. Just layered on like mud, just like all over my body. But at the same time, if we're talking about like a scholarly act, like I love classes, but there is something about digging into research and like putting it all together and then writing a thing. Be like, if this research happened and this research happened, well, that means this, because then there's another thing, but this was disproved. So then this other thing is a thing. And you're like, and then that's how I concluded that this is a true human situation and we should all be better for it. And then everyone goes, aw, we learned.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds like what dissertations are. Is that what dissertations are?
If you get the right supervisor. Otherwise, it's like 3 years of dread.
Okay. Australian public health. First of all, when I imagine public health, I think of going for my master's, doing that, and then working at a clinic or a hospital or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that it would be a challenge for me to integrate sex ed outside of STI education, HIV mm-hmm. education. Australia, though, you have informed me, has healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and what do you say, like, legalized prostitution?
Yeah, so sex work is legal. It's state by state. So in Victoria, where Melvin is, mm-hmm. sex work is legalized. And then in New South Wales, where Sydney is, it's decriminalized, which just means that it's completely removed from the criminal code. It's like a civil issue, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. I know more about the sex work system in Victoria, since that's where I went to school.
Okay. Well, that in itself is crazy, because, I mean, if I wanted to go hunt out some sex workers to, like, find out about their lives, it'd be super underground here.
Yeah, yeah. Not so much there. There's, like, a real strong, like, a kind of lobbying group and sex worker collaboratives. And, yeah, and, like, sex workers guest spoke at several of the classes that I took as part of my MPH. And one of the classes, we went on a field trip to a legal brothel.
That is so cool.
It was really fascinating. It was really cool for kind of humanizing it. Because when you're, like, growing up in California, it's all this very kind of underground, hush-hush, you know, criminal thing. And there it's, you know, the front store, you know, the storefronts, the brothel fronts are very, you know, obvious what they are. And
yeah.
It's not like most of them are not shady at all. They just look like businesses with the windows blacked out.
Huh. Brothels to me, I've never been in a brothel. Well, I was in Amsterdam. Have you been to Amsterdam?
I have, but I was 12, so I wasn't going to a lot of brothels.
That's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I regret that the night that we really dug into the red light district, I had smoked a lot of weed. Like, we went to a place called The Greenhouse.
As you do.
Yeah. Because it was like, okay, I'm in Amsterdam, I got to experience these things. But I don't know why we thought that we had to experience everything on the same night. But yeah, we experienced like the world's fastest joint roller ever. by hand, and then got way too high, and then all of a sudden we just walked around and suddenly we're in the red light district. Like, I hadn't planned it. I am the highest I've ever been in my early 20s life.
Were you really excited?
It was more like a strange dream, like where I was tugging on my friend's arm, like, we're in the red light, we're in here, because then you walk out down these alleys that are just filled with glass doors, and it's like a strange surreal dream where it's just women behind glass doors, like, dancing at you, trying to get you to want to go into their little cubicle to make with the happy and the money.
And they're like their little cubicles right off the street.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. I mean, and also it's sort of a gauntlet for tourists to walk around, because it's just
to see it.
Yeah, because you're really just, it's like a labyrinth of glass doors with dancing women. So, and some of them are in like secretary outfits. Some of them are in sexy lingerie. Some of them are like dummy. Some of them are, you know, it's just like everyone's got their own style. Everyone's got their hook.
So is there, it's a logistical question. So there's the glass where you can see the sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
Is there then like a private room behind?
Yes. Oh, like you can kind of see into the room, but that's like their space that they've rented out.
Oh,
yeah. Cause there, I think they were independent contractors, at least at the time that I was there. So
I believe that's how it works in Australia as well. They're independent contractors that work through the brothels.
Okay. Can they, I mean, so no glass door things. That's more of an Amsterdam tourism thing. Mm. Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So
you come to Melbourne. I'll show you around.
Oh my God. I want to.
Take you to sex geekdom.
Oh my God. I want to. Everything. So does it feel different? The health system, the sex ed system, all of that, versus coming from the USA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't get to benefit from I don't get free healthcare because I'm not a permanent resident or a citizen.
Okay.
But it's still just the healthcare system is so much cheaper because they have all these government bodies like regulating the cost of different health things. And it's quite funny when I remember I had to get an x-ray for something. The doctor's like, this is going to be really expensive. It's going to be like $100. And I just, I actually laughed at him, which seemed really kind of patronizing, but just to an American, that just seemed really like not a lot of money. And
yeah, like you're going into major debt if you want to even talk to a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have a friend here who went bankrupt, you know, paying medical bills. And that is such a completely foreign concept to an Australian. And like the quality of healthcare is really high. Mm-hmm. Like the first time I went to the doctor, I was kind of looking around like, oh, I got this appointment today and got right in. And the doctor was really lovely to me. And there were no death panels anywhere, like hiding, just, you know.
Death panels?
Oh, do you remember that? Like part of the whole, that's one of Sarah Palin's things. She was talking about how if we have socialized medicine, that there's going to be death panels that will decide whether you live or die. There were no death panels to be seen.
No, those death panels are called the closed rooms where they decide at your HMO whether or not you live or die. Like, that's already a thing. But anyway, I think that I'm like a couple years too late for that conversation. Teach me things from before. Well, there are so many misconceptions about socialized medicine.
Mm.
And like, for one, and of course, legalizing sex work.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question. How is everyone doing okay? How are STI rates?
Oh, I love talking about STI rates.
Ooh,
public health geeks in Australia love talking about this. So you have this public healthcare system. So mm-hmm. you can go to the doctor pretty much for free. And so if you have symptoms, like something like gonorrhea, that mm-hmm. For many people, they tend to have symptoms, unlike chlamydia.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have some gonorrhea symptoms, you've got something leaky and painful coming out of your penis, you can go to the doctor for free and you can get it treated.
Yeah.
And as a result, in some U.S. cities, the gonorrhea rate is like 100 times higher than some Australian cities. And everywhere it's higher in the U.S. because it's something that's symptomatic. So whereas you have something like chlamydia rates, they're about the same because people are asymptomatic and they don't know to go to the doctor. So it's sort of a different issue. But if you have symptoms,
people act on them in Australia.
Exactly. And they know that the reason that they wouldn't, if they are able to go get care if they notice that they have symptoms. And that's something that people learn from a fairly young age.
That's incredibly telling, because even in the non-sexual realm, like my eye, totally, I was telling Kate and Monica earlier before, my eye is bothering me in a way where you can't tell, but it's like, what is happening in my eye? But I know that seeing a doctor will be really dramatic.
Yeah.
Duh. My mom's a nurse. It's fine. This is, you don't have to have healthcare if you have a parent who's a health person.
I imagine that would be handy.
It is helpful.
I have educator parents. They're useful for, hey, how do I plan this lesson?
Ooh, that's handy.
That is handy.
Skills. So STI rates are way lower for symptomatic.
Yeah. And HIV rates are lower. And like in the U.S., you have pockets of heterosexually transmitted HIV, but mm-hmm. that's extremely rare in mm-hmm. Australia. And there's a lot better sexual health campaigns. Like you see this in West Hollywood. You'll see signs for HIV mm-hmm. care and things like that. But that's something that's a bit more widespread in Australia. People are just a little more kind of aware of what services exist, and education's a little bit better around prevention and things like that.
Right, because part of making sure that people are healthy is letting them know, hey, you have this option.
Absolutely. It's sort of cynically, if the government is paying for your health care, it's in their best interest to keep you from getting sick.
Right, preventative, cheaper.
Totally.
P.S., just here's a question, since you're public health knowledgeable. When I go to Planned Parenthood,
mm-hmm.
I'd mentioned this before, like, I know what condom brands work for my male playtime.
Mm-hmm.
I just know.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, like, I don't need condoms, like, at all. But they still insist on giving me condoms. And then it's like they give me extra condoms. Like, they give me the biggest bag of condoms.
Because they presume that you're rejecting them because you really need them or something.
No, like, well, when I had my IUD out and we discussed birth control, which was really great. I mean, I feel so appreciative that at least we have those services here in LA. But, and this has happened before, we like, no, I don't need condoms. Like, I got this. And like, I'll explain why I've got this specifically. And they're like, and they like kind of tap me a little bit and go, we're just going to give them to you just, they do this like knowing nod thing. And I'm like, what are you saying? Like,
That's kind of patronizing.
It is. And every time I end up, and I have this giant bag of like Lifestyles colored condoms that I'm not going to use because they're just boring times to me.
Yeah. I can understand that. A lot of people express that to me, actually, that they feel like often kind of mainstream sexual health services are quite pushy with the condom thing in a way that doesn't necessarily connect with people. You know, like it's.
Oh, so I'm not alone?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
A lot of some of the literature describes the concept too of condom fatigue. Have you heard that term before?
No, it sounds like it breaks.
It sounds like it breaks. Yeah. More like the desire to use them breaks, but that because it's so use condoms, you have to use condoms. People are getting kind of like, I don't really want to use condoms.
Right. It's like you're, well, I'm trying to think of a metaphor, but it's like yeah, someone's warning you about something so much. Mm. You're like, ugh.
One thing that I always wonder about services that provide condoms is why, I mean, this could potentially just be a funding issue, but I've wondered why they haven't offered more of a range, like especially size-wise. Because there's a fairly substantial population that they might not have really long penises, but the magnums are more comfortable.
Thank you. Because at one of my visits, I happened to have been dating someone who wears a Magnum XL. Mm-hmm. And I was like, honestly, these aren't even, they're, no.
Not going to happen.
And I know that they learned, as we all do, that a regular condom fits over a giant roll of paper towels.
Not comfortably.
But not comfortably, not sensually.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, it'll fit. It's like, well, yeah, but, you know.
Just because you can fit it over your arm doesn't mean that it's going to be comfortable. Can look like, you know, can look like a sausage or something, like pinching. That's not sexy.
Yeah, the pinching part, really. Ooh. Yeah. And it tends to irritate.
Yeah, and if, you know, if it's going to encourage people to use condoms more often because they fit and they're comfortable,
yeah,
why not? That seems like a good use of money to me. Yeah.
And I know the condom companies are good for it. Like, you know, they do provide to the... Tell me more about Australia. Tell me... Australia sounds like a better place. So tell me more fairy tales about this place.
Oh, fairy tales. Oh, there's lots of things about it that are better. There's things I miss.
Like koalas?
Oh, God, like koalas. Oh, they're so cute. Like, the first week I was in Australia, I got to go see some, and I saw them in the trees, and they were eating eucalyptus leaves, which doesn't make them high. There's sort of a myth that they eat the eucalyptus leaves.
Yeah, it makes them sleepier.
And makes, yeah, some people think that it makes them high, but it doesn't actually make them high. They've just got really slow metabolisms, and it makes them really lethargic and kind of... They're kind of like pandas. You know how pandas eat lots of low-calorie, low-nutrition food, but they're just kind of lethargic.
Mm-hmm. Kind of roll around, whatever.
Yeah. The only time koalas get really active is when they're mating or when they're scared. But when they're mating, they get really hardcore. They're like claws out, and it's very BDSM. And
You mean like the male mounts from behind the female and like... digs into her back and like bares its teeth like, I'm so mad at you, I'm not fucking you, like that?
Yeah, exactly. That's
really
precise.
Wow.
I highly recommend YouTubing that.
Okay.
Koala mating.
That's a little upsetting that I could imagine what...
I know, you just got it perfectly on the first try.
Okay, because have you ever seen like a gorilla mount, like a silverback gorilla mount a female?
No, I haven't. They really should have shown me that in one of my anthropology classes.
Yeah, it was physical anthropology, Jane Goodall documentary.
Uh-huh.
And the silverback, he just... like sidles up to the female, she's kind of lying down, he just like mounts her and just like humps her and looking incredibly bored and just like looking off to the side, just... Aww. Like, and it just mirrored like the most awful human sex.
That's sad. I know gorillas have really small penises.
Well, then there's...
They're
that.
Like 2 inches or something.
yeah there's small. I mean, sad. So she's like, whatever. But
Aww.
No, it's weird when an animal looks like a human so much.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
You're like, come on, use your hand. Do something. Come on. Play with her. Come on. Make out first. Something.
It was... Bonobos set a high, kind of high standard, I reckon, with all their kind of eye gazing and O faces and all that.
Yeah, the gorillas. It's interesting just to watch animals, you know, do their thing. But so koalas, like, is the female like fighting them or is the female into it?
You know, I haven't really seen enough koala mating to really... I don't recall. I saw a couple YouTube videos. I've never actually seen them mating in the wild. I have seen kangaroos mating in the wild, though.
And how big is the koala penis?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's actually internal. It's one of those like withdrawing ones that comes out. I don't think it's external, like a human penis. Yeah. I don't reckon they get to use it very often.
See, because you gave me a gift. Give me my koala. It's a koala from Australia, and it's covering its mouth like, oh, I'm so scared. But it's not scared. It's pretending because it's got to get you. It's going to help you, and it's going to have sex with you.
When I saw this, what I thought of, actually, one of the things about koalas, there's a chlamydia epidemic in the koala population. Like, it's a really...
And those are asymptomatic.
Yeah, well, non-koalas, they call it dirty tail, which I
what
think...
What the F?
I know.
Why?
I think what? They don't want to call it chlamydia because that sounds too sexual, I guess, for the koalas. But it's a real problem. It's actually... It can actually kill them, I believe. Like, it's really... It's a lot more terrible than it is for humans. But it is sexually transmitted.
Wait, what does chlamydia do to humans?
I don't... It can make you infertile.
Okay.
It can, for some people.
Okay. Oh, wait. Syphilis is the one where you go blind.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. All right. I was like, wait a minute. Okay. Fertile. But dirty tail, does that mean like their tail gets all funky? So it is symptomatic, at least, so you can kind of... Huh.
They're working on a vaccine, I believe. But he's like, oh no, I'm so shocked. I have chlamydia.
So the backside of this koala is all gray. So I feel like I need to take a marker and like,
yeah,
draw a dirty tail.
Dirty tail. Yeah, sounds... exactly. They've got these little flap tails.
I feel like I should, I don't know. Maybe it's the tag. It sounds, I don't know. I want to get some dirty tail. No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't want that at all.
No. See, to me, that sounds much more sexual than just saying they have chlamydia. It's a different strain of chlamydia, but still.
Right.
Yeah.
Not sassier. So you throw vulva cupcake parties.
I do.
And get off on, how do I even say this? You, because I love how nerdy you are. Like, it's so funny. And at the same time, it's funny to see it in another person because usually it's just in me. But you love when there's something like the Japanese. Okay, you mentioned when we were hanging out the other day, yeah, and I said, do not tell me because we need to save this for a podcast. But I really want to know, a female masturbation bar in Japan.
Oh, it was so exciting to me that I got to tell you about the female masturbation bar. Well, I didn't tell you, but I got to introduce the concept to you.
Well,
it was pretty exciting.
What? Like I went to Japan. Okay, we were both in Japan in the last 12 months.
I think it had opened after your trip. But I think it opened in something like October, September. That was when the blogosphere was kind of exploding with OMG, female masturbation bar, but nobody had actually gone. They were just talking about it.
Huh.
And they were asking these questions like, do people masturbate at the Japanese female masturbation bar, or what's the deal?
Like, yeah, gosh darn it, all of the stuff in the red light district in Tokyo was for either men, Japanese men, or Japanese couples. Americans do not apply. They just looked at us and like we got invited to be workers in the brothels.
Wow.
But not to actually
Were
get to go. No.
Or just weirded out.
No, we walked by one that was of focused on Filipino workers. And they were like, oh, you want to... I'm like, no,
I'm on vacation.
Yeah, I'm different in that I am not here for employment. Thank you, sir.
Probably be a violation of your visa terms, too.
Probably. Yeah. I don't think they'd mind. but so you... Please tell me. Please, okay.
So it wasn't, it actually wasn't in the red light district. It was in Shibuya. Do you remember Shibuya when you were there? Like with the big Shibuya crossing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like
Lawson Transition at that huge crossing with
huge malls everywhere. Lots of shopping.
Yeah. So it's right in there, like a 5-minute walk from the Shibuya crossing.
Is it up a hill?
Oh, maybe a little hill?
Because there's like Lover's Hill right there where it's like a mini red light district.
There wasn't anything. Oh, I think I know the one you're talking about. It wasn't there. It was surrounded by like Uniqlo and...
Uniqlo for the uninitiated is like the Gap of Japan.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. I got lots of, you know, scarves and long underwear and things. It was way colder than I expected when I was there.
Oh, Uniqlo. Okay, getting back. Focusing. So then you masturbated.
No, there's actually no masturbation.
What
happens in the female masturbation bar? It's actually quite a bit like sex geekdom. Like the whole purpose is to catalyze conversations around sexuality. And the woman who started it, her whole mission is to destigmatize specifically female masturbation.
Okay.
So she has this little bar and it's like, it's the size of a studio apartment. It's so tiny.
Okay.
And behind the bar, where in a normal bar, you would have bottles and bottles of liquor, she has a whole wall of high-end sex toys. Like, it's all good stuff, like Lalo and Fun Factory.
But it's set up like a bar.
And then there's the bar itself, and then there's a couple of little tables that have little beautiful fish bowls with things in them, like... My table had a Gigi in it, you know.
A Lilo curved, fancy silicone, multiple speeds and pulsations, rechargeable Swedish vibrator.
Awesomeness. Yes, exactly.
Was it in maroon or blue or lime green?
Oh,
was it light pink?
I think it was the maroon. I think so.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, I can't remember. But it was cool. And it's like, oh, it's a centerpiece. It's got a vibrator in it. So anyway, I took my husband there, and he was a good sport about that.
Oh, he was allowed. It wasn't women only.
Well, it's women only unless you're accompanied by a woman.
Okay.
So he was allowed to come.
Okay.
And they were very nice to him. And the only other, there were three other people in the bar. It was one woman and her two male companions.
Okay.
And they didn't say much, but, I don't speak Japanese, and the woman that runs the bar spoke a little bit of English.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of had this trying to communicate, and she was showing me all the toys. Like, this part of what she does is, you know, shows you how to use them, and ooh, isn't that cool? And she had a vibrator hanging around her neck, like a lollipop one, in this blinged out case.
She's the ultimate Japanese sex geek.
Oh, she's amazing. She's so amazing.
Oh my goodness, do you have pictures?
I do.
Oh, good.
I do have pictures. I actually took a picture of her with my vulva puppet.
That's right. This lady right here, Kate McCombs, for the record, travels with a vulva puppet. Full size. I have a travel size. You have a full size, like bigger than our heads situation.
If you fold it in half, it makes a really good travel pillow.
I bet it does.
Yeah.
Ooh, it could be like the ones that you see at Toys R Us and other places where it's an animal, but it has a Velcro tab so that you close
it. But it's a vulva. Yes. I take this everywhere with me and take pictures of it and then blog about it. But we were having this conversation about the sex toys and, with the woman that manages this bar. And then I go back to where I was seating and I pull out my vulva puppet and it like transcended all language barriers. Just all of a sudden it was just, oh, it was just so excited. And her friend was so excited. And then their favorite part, I think, was when they lifted up the clitoral hood and it's like, oh, there's the clitoris, you know? And anyway, it was really exciting. And I took a picture of her with it, with the bar in the background. And then I used that as the picture for the blog post that I wrote about
it. For my sexuality professor.
My sex professor.
Okay.
Yeah. No worries.
Oh, God.
MySexProfessor.com.
Okay. Let's get back on track. Let's get back to Australia. Oh, my goodness. You've been all around the world.
Yeah. I love traveling. Yeah. I've been really lucky.
Traveling is so hot.
It's fun. It's kind of sexy to do that with people.
It is. I tried to find sexuality stuff in Peru when I was there.
Oh, interesting.
And it was difficult. Like, it was incredibly difficult. People would shut down a little bit. I was like,
oh,
where?
Wow.
Yeah, I went on this. I was trying to find sex stores. Couldn't find them. I was like, you know, no one would tell me where the sex workers were. Nothing.
I really want to go to Peru. I went on my honeymoon in Ecuador.
Oh, what's in Ecuador?
The Galapagos. And we went to Quito, which is cool.
I don't know what Quito is.
It's just the capital city. I think it's the capital. Big city. Yeah.
Were there sex stores there?
Not that I found, but people were trying to sell us cocaine in one of the marketplaces. It was kind of funny. The tour guide was really kind of awkwardly trying to steer us away from people trying to sell us cocaine.
It's kind of funny. Oh my God. That's really funny. One thing I love about travel is how even in a place where there may not be any overt sexual stuff going on, you don't see the sexual paraphernalia, toys, anything, you always see the tourist boutiques that have the penis shaped wooden stuff.
Oh,
you
know, yeah, they have those in Mexico.
Yeah, the mugs with the people fellating each other and like the keychains where you pull the thing. It's interesting.
I find that interesting as well, and kind of tacky, even though I really like genital shaped things.
So you like the vulva cupcake party.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
Because it stimulates the conversation. And
exactly. Well, and the way we do it is kind of a make your own vulva cupcake party. So it instead of having it be kind of a monolith of one vulva shape, we have different colors and different sprinkles and different things you can add on.
Do a pierced clitoral hood?
Yeah, we have those little silver cashews. Is that how you say them? Those little edible silver balls.
Cashews are nuts.
Oh, it's spelled like C-A-U-C-H-O-U or something.
I was about to say cashews or vulvas don't have nuts, but I don't know. But yes, I know what those are, and they're crunchy. And you go,
yeah. We use those, and when pomegranate seeds make a really good clitoris.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. And then do you like? Is it?
You can eat it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it like the cake stuff for weddings? Is that what you use?
Oh, like fondant. Yeah.
Fondant.
Yeah, that's what we use. We use dyed fondant. We usually dye brown and pink and. And then you can kind of make a little ball and shape your own labia minora. And then we put the frosting on the outer edges where the labia majora would be. And then you can add rainbow sprinkles if you want festive pubes or like brown dyed toasted coconut if you want. Yeah, it's really fun.
Okay.
I love doing this.
I feel like I wouldn't eat my cupcake because I'd be too proud of it. And then I just want it there, you know, like
to marvel at it and take pictures of it and stuff.
Well, like I'd have it on my bookshelf and I would just let it be gross
and get moldy.
Well, okay. But the sugar, if you go to like baker's shops and they'll have in the window all the cakes, and they made them like 3 years ago when they opened the shop, and they're still sitting there collecting dust, but there's no mold, there's nothing. It just, it's sort of hardened.
Isn't there, there must be something they add to them to make them preserved, like
maybe.
I remember that in Japan, like all the plastic food, like the amazing plastic food
science.
They're
really into plastic food there. You know, there's like an actual place you can take the subway to where it's like the haven for all the plastic food you'll ever want to buy.
I heard that. I didn't make it, but I would love to have gone there. Maybe I could commission someone there to make like a plastic vulva cupcake just to have on my shelf, but not get moldy or filled with ants.
Oh, like a platter of possibilities?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some examples. I'd love that. That'd be so fun.
Oh, I don't know. Or you can, well, you know there's a vibrating cupcake at the Museum of Sex in New York City.
A vibrating cupcake? I've been to the Museum of Sex, but I've never seen their vibrating cupcake.
They do. I think it even has three speeds. You could make a vibrating vulva puppet. That would involve, what am I saying? A vibrating vulva cupcake.
That would be awesome.
And then you mix everything. Okay.
I don't know if I'd be sexually aroused by my vulva cupcake, though. It's more of, you know. But I wouldn't begrudge someone else being sexually excited by a vulva
cupcake.
It's
more just cupcake. Being dorky about the fact that.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'd still probably buy it.
Yeah. It's important. Speaking of genitalia, what's the deal with circumcision? Because I know the U.S. definitely had very high rates of circumcision.
Yeah, yeah. In Australia, the rates of circumcision are much, much lower. And even now that, you know, they're learning about the HIV prevention aspect of it, the HIV in Australia tends to be sex between men, mm-hmm. And you know, primarily receptive anal intercourse, so mm-hmm. which circumcision would not mm-hmm. do anything for. So yeah, it's sort of interesting. I have friends who are, you know, who are also American, expats. And when they've, you know, when they've started dating Australian men, it's been sort of like, whoa, I've never seen a foreskin before. And
right.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting.
People get real thrown off.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's been interesting to have the conversation too about like what the norms are around penis configurations in Australia and the US.
Did you date when you moved to Australia?
No, I moved with my husband.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I didn't know if you were like, oh, it's like now I'm in some sort of Sex in the City Melbourne edition and I'm Carrie Bradshaw.
Not exactly. I just talked to a lot of other people about their genitals and their partner's genitals.
Yeah, it's...
So it's sort of secondhand.
Right. Oh, foreskins. Well, that's cool. Wait, so the... I mean, because even before the HIV connection came about, which... I haven't looked into the research, but is it that strong of a connection between being circumcised and HIV?
Yeah.
Receiving HIV or giving your partner HIV?
Receiving it. It makes no difference in terms of giving it. If you contract HIV, even if you're circumcised, it doesn't affect whether or not you're likely to give it to someone else.
Okay.
But it's for if you're in a situation where there's a lot of heterosexually transmitted HIV, mm-hmm. it reduces your chances from getting it. If you are a circumcised male.
Is it because of the extra exposed mucous membrane on the inside of the foreskin?
Yeah, it has to do with that, and also the white blood cells that are present under the foreskin mm-hmm. are the kinds of cells that HIV can attach to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But there's other sort of complicated social issues, like if you get circumcised because you're trying to avoid HIV, are you less likely to use condoms to prevent getting HIV? And then does that put your partner at greater risk and those sorts of things? So it's important to clarify that it's like a risk reduction thing, not like a vaccine, if that makes sense.
Right, because people can get the wrong message about
things. Absolutely.
Oh, it's difficult. Yeah, it's like... You get lost in the details sometimes, and if someone misses that one word
that
or something,
key health promotion message,
right?
Yeah, like if you get the HPV vaccine, you still need to get pap smears and that sort of thing,
right?
It's kind of a similar
message. It doesn't
message.
Cover everything.
Although circumcision, like, doesn't, I think it protects something like 50-60% reduction in HIV transmission,
mm-hmm.
whereas the HPV vaccine is a bit higher than that, but mm-hmm. still, yeah,
right,
similar sort of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, females receiving. And HIV transmission is much higher than female to male.
Exactly.
And so it's...
Doesn't do a whole lot for women, obviously.
Right. It's the idea of this is a thing and circumcision isn't going to... It might change the game a little bit, mm-hmm. but the bigger issue is let's be safe and talk and get tested and do all these things to mm-hmm. like take care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Just... snip and then be like, we're good. No, it's not. That's not what we're saying. It's just a thing.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where if someone's, unwilling to use condoms for whatever reason, I would rather they, obviously, like if they're in a, I'd rather they get circumcised than, and if they're in a high HIV prevalence country or something like that, then to not, obviously that's, a harm reduction measure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's kind of an ambiguous public health message sometimes.
Right. And I mean, I know the listeners of this podcast and like where they're situated aren't necessarily in places where that would be helpful to
them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In countries like Australia, it wouldn't really make much of a difference on a population level.
Circumcision is like, okay, but here's a question is, because a lot of people think that circumcision for neonatal men, for neonatal babies is something males, is something that's like you have to do for health reasons. And this has been going on way before the HIV conversation we just had. I mean, it's so, why is Australia not doing it, whereas a country like the US is?
Yeah, this is not something that I've, read some sort of official study on, but I have read that it has a lot to do with the extreme religious roots in the US and how there was this kind of anti-masturbation fervor in the early 20th century.
Oh, have so you heard fervent. About this? I mean, like graham crackers and stuff?
Yeah, like graham and Kellogg and all those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that masturbation was sort of promoted as a, or sorry, circumcision was promoted as a masturbation reduction tool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of how it gained popularity. And then there was kind of medical suggestion that it might reduce risk of certain things later on.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom was telling me, she remembered when I was born that the medical doctors were advising her that that if you the female partner of males was less likely to have cervical cancer if her partner was circumcised, that was something that was medical knowledge at the time. But that's been discounted now.
But why were they telling her that when she was giving birth?
This is before I was born. She didn't know what sex I was before I was born.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
Sorry, that makes more sense. Yeah. I should have clarified that.
No. I was like, wait, what? Oh. That was my journey in my head. What? Whoa. It's medical. Oh God, the whole thing. Like my brain just goes down. I'm like, oh, people.
Yeah.
I like just celebrating our natural bodies.
Well, I like, if you're going to remove body parts, I like for there to be consent.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
I can understand certain context, medical value of it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Chopping it off. Yeah.
Yeah. When I talk to people who, like, generally when I talk to guys who are intact, they're like, woo, my penis.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who aren't happy about their foreskin, it's not because they don't like their foreskin. It's that other people haven't liked it and that they've been shamed.
Oh,
by other
interesting.
People. Yeah. I've never talked to a guy that was like, oh, I'm a foreskin, what am I supposed to do with that? Or like, oh, it's so annoying. I mean, there is something where like it can get too closed on the end and it the
phimosis.
Skin gets dry.
Phimosis. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And there's, but it doesn't mean you need to just cut it off.
Absolutely. No. Well, it's a funny thing. It's just kind of what people are used to. I mean, I hear similar stories of people who, like men who've only seen vulvas from pornography, like being confronted with one that doesn't look like kind of pornography vulva, kind of being surprised, not necessarily repulsed, but whoa, this is not what I was expecting.
Right. There's a whole lot going on here. This isn't like a total Georgia O'Keeffe painting.
Oh, I love Georgia O'Keeffe paintings.
I bet you do.
So much labia.
Oh my God. Be careful. Unless you're into this, I feel like people could start to call you like the vulva lady.
Oh, I'd be all right with being the vulva lady. Like, I love vulvas.
I mean, I do too. I just, as a branding thing, I just like you. To me, you are becoming in my head the vulva lady, and I like that. I mean, what do you love about vulvas?
I think what I just love talking about vulvas more than a love of like getting up in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I think that it's something that people don't talk a lot about. I mean, I meet a lot of educated women who don't know that the whole thing is not a vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about it, it's like, oh, it's actually the whole thing is a vulva. And there's lots of lovely parts there that are often ignored. Like even if you're paying attention to the clitoris, like the labia minora are capable of so much sexy stimulation, and you can massage the labia minora and get to the legs of the clitoris and all of that fun stuff. And I love talking about that. And that's a big part of what I like about things like the vulva puppet. It's like a, you know, it's a conversation piece.
No, it totally is. I mean, and it's humongous. Like, it's like it is the size of a coffee table book.
Yeah.
So it is a conversation piece.
I'd love to do a coffee table book of all of the pictures of places in the world where I've taken photographs of my vulva puppet.
Oh my God. And I just want to be photobombing in the background holding a dildo. Like,
yeah! I have one that was sort of photobombed. Normally, like, whoever I'm traveling with, this time it was my husband. He, you know, whoever it is, kind of looks around and makes sure that there's nobody who might see my vulva non-consensually. I like there to be consent about who sees my vulva puppet, like people coming to the blog, things mm-hmm. like that. And anyway, so I'm there holding the vulva puppet, and this one teenage kid like is just making this face looking like, what the hell is that? Totally photobombing it. It's great. It's actually one of my favorites.
That's hilarious. Where do you bring, okay, like you travel with it, but I mean, you teach workshops.
I do.
Are you, because like, is there a lot more funding in Australia for bringing you into schools to teach teenagers? Mm-hmm.
I've only taught in schools once. I taught in one high school in sort of it was like an assembly forum. It's like 150 students. And I co-taught with my friend Louise Boucher. We sometimes co-teach together. And she's mm-hmm. an amazing sex educator. She's Kiwi. So we both are kind of outsiders in Australia teaching together.
She's Kiwi. You said
she's Kiwi.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Sounds delicious.
I reckon you'd like her. Mm. She's amazing. Anyway, so I don't usually teach in schools. I usually teach university age students. So
okay.
Universities will hire me to teach workshops like pleasure physiology or eroticizing safer sex, things like that. And then I co-teach a class on HIV and mm-hmm. global health mm-hmm. at University of Melbourne. And I work for this amazing professor named Tim, who's brilliant.
Excellent.
Yeah. And appreciates my vulva puppet. He had me bring it in. It was awesome.
Well, we definitely need you back on to talk about eroticizing safer sex. That sounds really interesting.
I love talking about that. Yeah. I did my master's thesis on it, actually.
What?
On pleasure-inclusive STI prevention.
Get out of here, you sex nerd.
It was awesome. It was so much fun.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much, Kate, for coming in.
It is an absolute pleasure. I love being here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Where can people find out more about all the cool stuff you do?
Well, you can find out more about me on the About Kate page on sexgeekdom.com. That's geekdom, GEEKDOM. And I'm also on Twitter. I love Twitter. And my handle is KateCom, KateCom.
Hmm. Side note, geek versus nerd. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's a false dichotomy, I think.
Oh, it's good. It's good. I have opinions.
What are your opinions?
I think nerd is a Taoist, like it's a way of life. Geek is specific to a region, whereas I nerd about anything I'm excited about. And that could be everything.
It's that curious thing again, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of intense. But I feel like geek is probably more inclusive to more people because they may not be geeky about everything and want to know all the things about all the things. But sex is something that's worthy of geekiness, like foodies.
Yeah.
You know,
sex and food, that's kind of where it's at.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is a little bit of a false dichotomy because the sneaky part is just have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.